Welcome to Day 2 Cloud. In today's show, we're going to have a conversation with NetApp. Now, you think of NetApp as a great big storage company. What have they got to do with cloud? A lot. They have a lot to do with cloud. Like a lot to do with cloud, very much so, is what we discovered in this show, Ned, didn't we?
Yeah, we really did discover a lot about what they're doing when it comes to the cloud. And it's not just, hey, let's slap our arrays inside a cloud data center and call ourselves a cloud company. They're really taking a look at how they can automate and take some of the principles of cloud and apply them to their existing product portfolio to make the day two life of an administrator or an operator that much easier, especially with NetApp products. So it was really interesting to see how they're trying to push the enterprise forward to get closer to where the industry has shifted.
And this wasn't just, you know, like this purely this tedious product pitch. We're talking a lot about NetApp and NetApp products, but Nick, our guest that you're about to meet, is a lot of fun. And we really enjoy this recording. It's a heck of a conversation. So please join Ned and I as we chat with Nick Howell, Field CTO at NetApp. Nick, welcome to Day 2 Cloud. In a sentence or two, we don't want your life story, but in a sentence or two, would you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, my name is Nick Howell. I'm the Global Field CTO here at NetApp for our Cloud Data Services business unit, which basically means it is my job to make sure that everybody, customers, partners, and the industry knows all of this stuff that we're doing in the cloud. Like, we're doing stuff besides selling storage arrays, and I think that's what we're here to talk about.
We are, but before we get there, I just have this weird little footnote that I think the audience might think is interesting. You have a wrestling podcast, Nick.
I do, admittedly, yes. The quick story is like one of my fondest childhood memories was sitting on my grandfather's lap watching wrestling when we used to have those giant satellite dishes that you had right. to wait to tune in. Mm-hmm. They would turn, right? So wrestling has been part of my life since the 80s, since I was a kid. So it kind of made sense. And I've always watched it as a way to just kind of remember. But at a certain point, it's General Hospital for people that like action, you know? It's a soap opera at the end of the day. Why do people watch soap operas? It's because it's a lot of the similar reasons. So, yeah, we decided a few years ago, met a guy named Ian, who also was a big fan of wrestling. And I was already doing a bunch of other stuff around podcasting, and it just kind of made sense. And it's been fantastic. And literally last night, we recorded our 200th episode, which was fantastic. 3+ years into the show, and we even live stream it on YouTube now every single week, multiple times a week now at this point. So, yeah, wow. Wrestling. Who knew that would be a good podcast to have in 2020?
Yeah, as a child of the 80s, I also grew up with wrestling. I fell off at some point, but you know, any of the old 80s wrestling icons, I'm right there with you. Jim Hacksaw Duggan is probably my favorite. But exactly, we are here to talk about NetApp and not wrestling. Maybe we can do another podcast just about wrestling. But I think a lot of people, if they think NetApp, and they're immediately thinking storage, you know, ONTAP and big storage arrays, maybe filers, like that's the thing that they're thinking of. But that's not the NetApp that you're thinking of necessarily. So can you walk us through kind of like what's in the cloud portfolio for NetApp?
Sure, absolutely. Great question, and it's one of the ones that we run into all the time. And to your point, they wouldn't be wrong in thinking that. We've got, last year we were awarded with the top echelon of Magic Quadrant on Gartner for best all-flash arrays with our all-flash FAS platform. So it's like finally we've made that recognition that we're the best out there. So they wouldn't be wrong in thinking that. But where we tend to fall off a little bit is, why is a NetApp guy talking to me about Kubernetes right now? That's typically the you get that kind of deer in headlights look a little bit like, I came here to talk about storage. Why are we, or cloud? Why is there a NetApp guy in front of me? And the reason is because we've been very strategic. Back in 2013 or so, our now CEO, George Kurian, had an idea, and he called it data fabric, where data would move anywhere between clouds or your on-prem facilities and across your storage arrays, leveraging cloud components or resources. And we needed a way to move that around. So the past 3 or 4 years, we've been on this journey of building a set of products that we put into this envelope called Cloud Data Services that do everything in a better way we think that the enterprise has become accustomed to, or frankly, that we've spoiled them with on-prem performance and resiliency and latency and all of those things that we talk about as infrastructure folks all the time, that hasn't existed to this point in the cloud. You've had to over-architect these things to duplicate that experience that you're used to getting on-prem. So what if we could take some of our gear or some of our software that's on-prem and leverage that in the cloud? That's the journey that we set off on, and we've now got this entire portfolio to show for it.
Well, and by entire portfolio, there's a whole bunch of products here, actually, that are tied into this. So I heard you guys give a presentation at a Tech Field Day event I attended back in November 2019. Like, you got cloud volumes, you got Azure NetApp files, you got cloud data services, you got a Kubernetes platform that is that's got NetApp tied to it, of all things. You've got something that, at least at the time, you were calling Fabric Orchestrator. So just, again, we don't have to dive into every single one, but just at a high level, what am I actually getting there? If I'm in the cloud, that means I can still be consuming NetApp for storage. Is that the big idea here?
That's the big idea. And you're going to find some nuance with each one of those things across the different clouds. I mean, the UIs and the APIs are different between AWS, Azure, and GCP anyway, right? So people that are used to working in the cloud know that stuff, and they're kind of comfortable with that. Or they've just established a beachhead on one of them. Part of working in the cloud is evaluating the three, which one works best for me. But this idea that we're going to be across all three and on-prem all at the same time is not so much realistic, but not impossible. So we needed a way that we could cover all of those bases. Let's level up the storage capabilities of what the cloud providers provide themselves natively in order to usher in the enterprise with. They have a different set of features than the people that depend on apps on their phone, for example. There's different requirements there for the enterprise. That 6 nines of availability that you hear touted all the time about on-prem enterprise gear, well, that doesn't exist in the cloud. AZs go down every week, right? A network connection gets cut every week. So something along those lines, we needed to fill those gaps and deliver that experience in the cloud that people have been used to on-prem for some time. So the difference in the names of the products across the clouds is it's mainly just a little bit of nuance there between each of the different cloud providers, the way they implement it, the way the agreements worked out. AWS is a marketplace offering, whereas Microsoft's in Azure is a first party service that where they're actually putting the A700 all flash arrays into the Azure regional data centers.
Yeah, Microsoft's or Azure, I guess, is your customer in that case.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah, it is a sort of a co-op engineering effort, but yeah, they're the ones buying the storage arrays. I won't name the partner that's doing it, but that's going through a partner to handle all of this for both of us and putting it all into the Azure regional data centers and wiring it directly to the Fabric interconnects. And I was in London a couple of weeks ago at our Insight event, last week, I should say, and I got to talk with the Azure biz dev lead. He told me it was the number two fastest growing service in Azure today. Imagine. So for those of you that are in infrastructure and in the enterprise, imagine having access to hundreds of thousands of IOPS at sub-millisecond latency in the cloud natively in Azure. It's that we haven't seen anything like that. The all of those roadblocks for running tier one applications like giant Oracle databases or even SAP. And we've even achieved the SAP HANA certification by the end of last year. Hmm. So doing all of that in Azure is now possible with the advent of this campaign that we've been on with Microsoft.
Right. And I think the number one fastest growing service, at least it was the fastest growing service, I don't know if this is still the case, was Azure Kubernetes Service, which you can take Azure Kubernetes Service and wire it into the NetApp offering for the storage backend and get that level of performance from both sides. And I thought that was an interesting contrast. You also have a product that's called NetApp Kubernetes Service. Mm-hmm. So is that your own Kubernetes thing, or is that leveraging like AKS and other Kubernetes services in the different clouds?
So everybody at this point has their own Kubernetes service. We've seen OpenShift and Pivotal come up, and they're more of a downstream offering where they're modifying stuff. But we've seen the rise of not only the native Kubernetes services in the cloud providers, but also the rise of some of these more upstream services that are, you know, one level up from the Kubernetes control plane itself, where we could abstract, we can control Kubernetes cluster deployments across multiple clouds and even on-prem like we're doing. So it's not leveraging. At a certain point, StackPoint Cloud, the company that we acquired at the end of 2018 to facilitate NetApp Kubernetes Service, was doing or had the ability to orchestrate the spin up of either EC2 instances, or you could just go straight to EKS, for example. Same thing across all three clouds. We've since rethought that in the sense that we have different roadmaps, different visions, different priorities. So we're taking that out and allowing people to just orchestrate directly to either EC2 or Azure VMs or Google VMs. And the differentiator for us is we've got our NetApp HCI platform. So if you're using VMware, you can even do it on-prem. Mm. And you can do it all from one control plane in the NetApp Kubernetes service to be able to orchestrate across all of that. That includes Istio, that includes Helm. All of that stuff is built into it. So if you want to build a service mesh, if you want to build some architecture here on the show, we could theoretically have an Istio service mesh that would span all three clouds and your on-prem environment. That workload would be able to move between clusters on all four environments. That's not realistic, though. Nobody's
That makes for great demoware, but I don't know if it makes good for enterprise deployments.
Right.
You mentioned enterprise versus cloud a few times. I think that's an interesting dichotomy that you're kind of building out there. Do you feel that the enterprise experience is superior in some ways to the cloud experience, or is it just different? Sort of, where are you drawing that delineation between the two?
So my background is in infrastructure. It's funny that Ethan, that the presentation you mentioned that you had seen was, I even titled it An Infrastructure Admin's Journey to the Cloud, because what does it mean psychologically, professionally for these individuals that have invested 10 to 20 years of their lives in infrastructure and virtualization and management of all of those resources? And now to say, it's all irrelevant, just go click a few mouse buttons in AWS or Azure and you're done. Like, we have to start over in a way. It's not that all of that information and knowledge is irrelevant, but the processes and the way we go about it is getting flipped on its head a little bit. And that changes entire business models for companies when they know that I don't have to budget for the next 3 years and millions of dollars in infrastructure refreshes. I can just pull the Amex out and everything's OPEX versus a CAPEX now. It's a bigger question, but there's resistance to it because, again, people fear for their... What happened when virtualization came out? Oh, everybody's freaking out because my job's going away, right? We went through this in that era and nothing didn't really happen. You still need storage folks. You still need networking folks. You still need server folks. There's still people that are going to be managing a lot of that stuff. What changes is the way you do business. And it's instead of spending 6 months and spending $1 million and making the person requesting the app or the workload sit around and twiddle their thumbs, you're changing a process from 6 months to 6 minutes. And you can go and do all of that in an orchestrated ServiceNow ticket, you know, that they can just open themselves and you literally never have to touch it. It's everything's different. And it's hard. You find this resistance from enterprise admins a little bit. And I understand it. I get it more than anybody. I really do. And it's not the panacea. It's not going to solve world hunger. But at the same time, it's something that we're going to have to embrace to move forward at the scale things are moving at and the pace that things are moving at. They say nobody's building data centers anymore. They're kind of right, except Amazon and Microsoft and Google are building, and frankly, IBM and Alibaba to some extent. Are building some of the, they're spending billions of dollars building some of the biggest, most advanced green data centers we've ever seen. So that work isn't going anywhere. I hear the word serverless all the time as one last little quip here. And I always laugh at that. There's always a server somewhere. There's always a compute somewhere, whether it's a chiplet or whether it's a vCPU or whatever it is, there's always a server serving that compute somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to pick on serverless, I mean, it's interesting. It's just yet another layer of abstraction, even more than what we've seen with IaaS and public cloud. The abstractions are everywhere. But as you, right, I mean, right, it's gotten to be an old joke now. Ah, there's servers underneath serverless. Yeah, we know. But I think the interesting larger point is it's abstractions now. And eventually, you get down to the hardware, but we're really kind of far from that hardware. But this actually leads me to another question for you, Nick, because I think there's a philosophical point for us to make here. it's not just that NetApp has some storage products for the cloud. I mean, it feels like there's something more fundamental going on here. Can you expand on that?
It is. In a sense, it's we're changing the way that we do business. And I spent the day in RTP yesterday doing EBCs, talking with three different types of customers settings. Some of them are just coming out of virtualization and exploring microservices as their next step. Some of them are already moving into beyond Kubernetes and they're just going all in on the cloud. Like they want to evacuate all their data centers and just run everything, all of their VDI, all of that in the cloud. So every engagement you walk into, you're having these different conversations. The perspective I'd like this audience to have specifically is we can help you. We have a menu of offerings from on-prem storage and our HCI offering so that you can do disaggregated compute and storage in an HCI platform, all the way up to any of our services that you know and love from the days of ONTAP, available in all three of the major cloud providers as well. So there's a menu of offerings there that can help you pretty much architect anything you could want to put together. And that's the perspective I really want people to take away, is that we're not just trying to sell you a storage array. We're not just trying to sell you ONTAP licenses or SnapMirror licenses. It's bigger than that.
You mentioned architecture, and I think that's an interesting word to use here, that you're offering potential architectures. And that's like, for me, that's a very day one thing, is let's take the requirements. We have to build out a design. We have to architect the solution. And then you get to day two, you know, the namesake of the podcast, which is when you actually have to manage and operate this behemoth. And if someone has architected a solution that's using two of the public clouds, and it's using your HCI solution on premises, and who knows what else, they hand that off to the operations team. The operations team is like, what do I do? So is there also a tool that NetApp has been developing to help the operations and management team sort of get their arms around the complexity that comes out of the enterprise architect down the hall?
That's a big, huge softball that you just lobbed up for me to hit out of the park. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much for that, Ned. Yes, there's a tool you may have heard, and it's available on cloud.netapp.com along with all of our other cloud products. It's called Fabric Orchestrator, right? And the original vision for this, you guys might remember the acquisition of Green Cloud that we did at the end of 2017. And they had a piece of technology called QStack, which was, think of it like Fabric of APIs. It was a way to consolidate and centralize endpoints into a central endpoint. But that wasn't really the big reason. If you look at the landscape of the cloud portfolio right now, it's about 12 to 13 different products. Each have their own UI, each have their own API, each have different product managers and engineering teams. That, like, it's all spread out. What we're doing with Fabric Orchestrator is we needed a vCenter. I'll talk in terms that the infrastructure folks would understand. NetApp didn't have a vCenter. We needed a platform that would centralize all of our offerings in one place, both on-prem and in the cloud. We needed an extensible interface that we could allow third-party ISVs to come in, bring their plugins, bring their products, call it an app store if you want, so that we could encourage people to buy add-ons and things like that that would make their situation that much better. And we needed a way to just grow this stuff going forward and leverage all of this. God, we have so much data on our customers' gear and lifecycle and where it is, and we can help them. We can help them with a lot of these refreshes and where they're wasting space and aged data and all of that. You know, we can tell them that they have 60 terabytes of data that nobody's touched in 90 days in some random volume in Germany that could probably be shipped off to an S3 IFA bucket. Stuff like that, right? Hmm. Fabric Orchestrator is the culmination of all of this all coming together. And it's not only an inventory mapping tool of where everything is, but it's also going to centralize all of the APIs and UI for all of those products that we have on cloud.netapp.com. So NetApp Kubernetes service, all of our cloud volumes, Azure NetApp files, as well as your inventory that you have on-prem, all of that inventory in one place, then we can start doing fun stuff with it, like tags and labels. We can begin to apply policies across your entire, policies for standardization around protection, tiering of data, things like that. And we have tools that will execute those things under the covers based on the policies that you set. The way that I describe Fabric Orchestrator most times to people is that it's the big red execute button. We have plenty of tools out there in the world that will give us advice, that will scan and tell us what we have, but don't really tell us what to do with it. That's where we're taking Fabric Orchestrator. Once we have this all corralled into one place and you've set some policies around it, now we can start making recommendations on things.
Oh, there's about 8 million things to dig into, Nick. Thank you. Yes. First of all, you've made this comparison to vCenter. And actually, yeah. I heard you present on this back, again, going back to that Tech Field Day event where I heard you present about Fabric Orchestrator first. You said, I want operating a NetApp environment without Fabric Orchestrator to be as unthinkable as running a vSphere environment without vCenter. So you're sticking with that vCenter comparison there.
Yeah.
But also you're talking to us about Fabric Orchestrator as if it's this idea that's happening in the future. So is Fabric Orchestrator a product today, or is this like a thing you hope happens eventually?
It is a product today. It's in preview mode right now. We're being very white glove and hands-on with anybody that comes in and uses it, because it does have consequences if you use it incorrectly, much like vCenter, right? If you don't set it up the right way, you can delete all of your VMs very easily. So no, we in these initial first offerings, we've got some very large customers with tons of data globally in the cloud and on-prem, and they're gracious enough to come play and preview with us to make sure we go through this. We're looking for this to be, it is out there. You can request to be a part of the preview, and that'll be evaluated by product management, and there'll be an interview call and things like that. But if you're already playing in the cloud using some of our cloud services and you have stuff on-prem, that's probably the best case scenario, and you're a really good candidate for that. But we're looking to have this thing out this year, available to everybody, all NetApp customers and beyond. And frankly, you don't have to be a NetApp customer. You don't have to own a storage array. If you're just using it for your cloud products, you know, if you have cloud volumes at Amazon and Microsoft, you can use it for that, and you can build policy around it. There's no like hidden requirement that you have to have a serial number or license or anything like that.
Right.
So how would a customer, like today, there are no NetApp customers. Well, it sounds like you've got a few people that are doing some early testing with it. But generally speaking, there are no NetApp customers that have this product. Are they going to transition then to Fabric Orchestrator?
It's part of the process. Like today, we have a handful of disparate tools that can do different things. And again, it's part of that menu of offerings. So we've got, what do they call it? The on-command manager. That unified manager that they can use it. They can use our tools, Snap Creator, to schedule snapshots on a grander scale, a centralized orchestrator for creating snapshots and backups and cascades of mirrors between destinations and things like that. There's all of those tools exist, but this is kind of part of that whole story too. As NetApp itself gets a little more meta, we need the tools to become a little more consolidated. We can't live with all of these different separate tools anymore. So how do we do that? We use policies. We corral all of the data into one place, and then we operate on a policy-based method.
I do like the policy concept, because that seems to be a driving force in a lot of the cloud deployments that I'm seeing now, is having policies to govern how things are deployed, the life cycle for things.
Right.
So that really resonates. I know there's a whole Kubernetes project that's called the Open Policy Agent that's all about just like having a policy language and then enforcing that policy on objects. And I think they're trying to extend that beyond just Kubernetes. Is your policy engine borrowing from that, or is this something that you've cooked up yourself?
It's not borrowing from that. It's literally taking advantage of tags and labeling that we've seen in Kubernetes. So the back end of a lot of what goes on in Fabric Orchestrator is going to be leveraging, frankly, a lot of our NetApp Kubernetes service technology as well. So a lot of the things we have coming in the future, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, has a lot to do with how we're putting this together under the covers. And it's a little bit of eat your own dog food, drink your own Kool-Aid kind of stuff when it comes to that. Like, let's make sure that, I mean, this acquisition that we made a couple of years ago, it's not just for spinning up clusters and then you move on and do something else. No, there's more to this. And, you know, the NetApp Kubernetes Service Platform is going to be built into this as well as one of the other products that are in that cloud portfolio, but all of it is going to be orchestrated within this fabric, within this orchestrator mm-hmm. platform that covers everything from inventory management to policy-based management to what we call fabric flows, if you think of them like orchestrated workflows. All of that stuff is all going to be part of this grand, you know, culmination of all this cloud products that we've been building for the last few years.
Sure. When I think about, like, one of the things that made vCenter and probably VMware in general so successful was the fact that they were pretty vendor agnostic when it came to the hardware side of things. Like, they'd run on Dell, they'd run on HP, they'd run on, you know, whatever server you brought to them, whatever storage you wanted to bring, whatever network. As long as they could run a virtual machine and get vCenter running, that was the important part.
Sure.
And then you could manage all of those components. Like, is there an equivalent analogy that you can make with how Fabric Orchestrator is approaching the orchestration of cloud or something along those lines?
To an extent, yes. I will say that our NetApp Kubernetes service is agnostic for the underlying hardware. We just require VMware Enterprise Plus to be in there so that we can orchestrate to it. If you've got HP servers and some other storage underneath the covers there, that's cool. We have those plugins. You can go download them for free. It's just all we're charging you for is the worker node time per month, per minute, that kind of thing. But from Fabric Orchestrator's perspective specifically, there is going to be a dependence on the NetApp technologies, at least in the very beginnings of this. We're not looking to inventory everybody else's stuff. And I feel like it's an apples and oranges comparison to an extent, because we're not hosting storage for other applications, if you think about it that way. We're actually hosting the data that applications will take advantage of. So there will be an open, extensible ISV sort of interaction there, much like vCenter had, where all of us could come in and put our plugins in. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's going to be third parties. It's not going to be what I call them, competitors or co-opetition in that way. It's not going to be that's a little bit more apples and oranges, and carries a little bit of nuance with it.
Right. No, that makes sense to me.
Nick, we're positioning Fabric Orchestrator here as a tool that operators and infrastructure kind of folks are going to be interacting with. So you've mentioned at a high level some of the capabilities. For one thing, unifying all these different products and so on. You had mentioned this idea at the top of the show about a data fabric. So is this kind of like my interface to this NetApp idea of a data fabric? I'm working within Fabric Orchestrator.
Yeah, its namesake originally was Data Fabric Orchestrator. And it was the way to orchestrate and control and have a central API endpoint for all your entire data fabric across all three major clouds and on-prem. Whatever gear you had, whatever services you were taking advantage of, we could help you orchestrate, monitor, report on, back up, and protect. We can do compliance checks. Now that we have an inventory of all your data, cool. We can run our cloud compliance platform against it, which is a result of the Cognigo Tel Aviv acquisition that we did last year, bringing that intelligence into the platform as well. So yes, it's the consolidation. It's the end game, so to speak, to bring all of this stuff together at the end. And it's going to be Data Fabric Orchestrator, but who knows? We might change the name again 10 more times in the next year.
I can assume that you will, because that's what marketing does. You'll come up with some more clever name, Nick.
Yes.
API. Now you said an API, a unifying API here. Does that mean I'm going to get an API, and it's not just one place or one point to interact with this API, but that this API is written in such a way that it is abstracting platform differences away from me, so I can make one call that does a thing, and no matter how it might be done on the six different kinds of things underneath, the Fabric Services API is going to just kind of make those differences go away from me? How is it a unifying API, I guess?
You're doing my job for me, Ethan. You just totally nailed it right there. So each of those 10 to 12 different products that we have on the cloud portfolio right now, from Cloud Volumes to Cloud Sync, which is sort of a data mover at the end of the day, for cloud compliance, cloud tiering, each of those products has their own API. And you can pull them today. So what we're doing is basically centralizing those, pulling those into one larger meta API to rule them all in Fabric Orchestrator, and then layering a pretty UI on top of it using that same API stack. And all it's going to be able to control and orchestrate down stack to each of those individual products APIs.
Now, can I, as the end user, the customer, read and write to that API myself if I want? Is it like a documented and open thing? Or is it, I've got to use that? Oh, okay, yes. Okay.
100% yes. And that's kind of the point. We're using the same API to build the UI and a lot of the other extensible platforms and things like that. So typically you would write to the API of the individual product. Now you just make a call to a policy. Or I'm going to take it one step further. We have what's called Fabric Flows or even Fabric Apps if you want to keep them around for a long time inside of this. What is that? Think of like IFTTT on steroids. it's something along that line where you can receive an email or a ServiceNow ticket or something else that you want, whatever platform you want, that's going to trigger the execution of a workflow. And you can build that workflow to do all kinds of stuff in a sort of if-then-else format. And you can parallelize a lot of the operations in there. But that call that you make as an end user can be simply sending an email that will open a ServiceNow ticket that would kick off something along some kind of fabric flow. It can be orchestrated that high up. Hmm. So all of that is all part of this fabric orchestrator thing. It's not just an inventory platform. It's not just extensible to third parties. It's also got all the things that you need from an orchestration platform as well.
Well, okay, so your play of stating that this should be indispensable to a NetApp environment, that you couldn't imagine operating your NetApp environment without Fabric Orchestrator. You're explaining effectively why that's the case. If I've got a unifying API that I can write to and it takes care of all the things for me and does a good bit of abstraction, then right, that at its core, I think, is the thing that's going to make it indispensable. Then you begin to layer on top workflows. You begin to layer on top the policy engine that unifies all those bits underneath. And then right, I kind of get it. It's like if you have a very tiny NetApp environment, maybe you just do the one thing. But then as soon as you get into a multitude of places where you're dealing with NetApp storage up in the cloud and on premises, then right, how would you live without it? You'd want to bring your operational control under a central bit of software, and the way you're structuring Fabric Orchestrator, that feels like that to me. That's the thing. It's not just, it's this nice thing where you can kind of pave over the top of some stuff, but it's not buying you that much. It's buying you a lot.
Yeah. Hence the namesake of the podcast, your day two operations, right? Exactly. The things you do on a day-to-day basis. For the most part, in the last 10 years, we've done a really good job of automating a lot of that away, right? Mm-hmm. With the advent of ServiceNow and that becoming a kind of a mainstream thing, most companies that you walk into now have some kind of ticketing system in place. It's a question of how far have they taken it? How much have they implemented automation as part of their day two sort of operations every day? So yes, you can point it out. The way it works, you fire it up for the first time and you log into your NetApp Now account, and we have access to your ActiveIQ data, which is a lot of ML that we're doing on customer data behind the scenes to facilitate some recommendations of how they could take advantage of their stuff better. Hmm. And off to the right of that, we're also giving you the opportunity to authenticate to AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud. Now, once I do that, I have visibility into all three of your cloud subs, and I have visibility to your NetApp Now account. And after about 20 minutes of polling and scanning and inventorying, I should say, now we get to a point where we can actually start building. We can start looking at this and be like, okay, I want that. I want to build some policies. I don't want any data to be not in object storage beyond, if it hasn't been touched in 60 days. So you can start doing things like that and setting protection policies. Like if a volume has production as a label, it needs to be backed up and then replicated to this place. That's a policy. And then you just assign that label to a piece of data and it automatically inherits that policy going forward. Hmm. Stuff like that. That kind of automation, but it just requires the upfront effort of sitting down, war rooming with your whole team on a whiteboard, like we've all done in the past, and coming up with what those policies and what you actually want to do with your stuff. We can't do that for you, unfortunately. We can. There's some professional services that'll come in and absolutely help you do that. We have some great partners that can come and help you do that kind of stuff. But once you implement that, man, it's going to take care of a lot of stuff for you.
If I'm designing these policies in my war room with my team, we've got some great policies that we want to put into effect. What is the user experience like for actually getting those policies in place? For instance, you know, I can draw up some really good IAM policies for AWS and they look great on paper. And then I go to the portal or I try to do it through the CLI and oh my God, my brain wants to explode because the user experience, it's frankly awful. Yeah. I don't want to dump on it, but I think everyone would agree that the IAM experience in AWS is a little challenging. So
no comment.
How are you designing the user interface and experience in Fabric Orchestrator to make it a simpler transition from concept to reality?
Sure. We're thinking about it in the context of, in its simplest forms, the way I look at it. I can't speak for the developers personally, but from my perspective, it's that if-then-else kind of workflow. And it's around creating that. When you're creating that policy, you're searching for labels or you're creating new labels. And then you have to go assign those labels to the things you want to apply policy to. So all of the policy engine, when you're creating your policies, is filtering or exact matches or Boolean phrases or things like that that you want to match and apply policy to automatically. And you have different levels that you can turn the dial on as far as, think about DRS recommendations in vCenter, right? You have the aggressive versus very low. You have a little bit of control over just how aggressive we can be with some of that, but you're creating the policies. If you're setting up a tiering policy, for example, and I want data that hasn't been accessed in 60 days to be moved from Azure NetApp files to Azure Blob. Cool, we can do that for you. And that's a policy. You put that on every volume that might be an SMB share. There you go.
Okay.
I have an architectural question for you, Nick, about this that popped in my head. It's a subtle distinction to make, but I think it's an interesting one. Is you described Fabric Orchestrator earlier as kind of the big red go button. You hit this thing and and things happen. We've been talking about policies and how we can automate a lot of the things we want to have happen based on the policies that we've configured. All right, so does Fabric Orchestrator, is it the bit of software that makes all of that magic happen directly by talking downstream to the devices? It does all this configuring and or provisioning and or taking actions itself? Or is it more like a controller of controllers where it's the thing you talk to and it talks to these other controllers downstream, what it is that that it wants to be done?
It's more of the former, and there, I'm not going to say it's all or none. It's mostly the former of what you were saying, where we're taking those APIs and we're calling the when you look at the UI for Fabric Orchestrator, you'll see all of those cloud products in the left-hand blade. Like you'll be able to go to each of them individually and set up, individual policies, or you could even run them within the UI natively in Fabric Orchestrator. Like if you just wanted to use that one product, for example. So it's not that we're calling down to other endpoints. It's more of like, it's the consolidation. We're executing the workflows directly. We're not calling a controller and saying, hey, would you mind running this for me? Would that answer your question?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, it is pretty much the brains that are doing it, with maybe some exceptions, depending on the most appropriate thing that Fabric Orchestrator needs to interface with to get the job done.
Yeah. You might notice there's one word I haven't used yet. Either you guys want to take a guess?
Containers, DevOps.
Federation?
No, think storage. Think NetApp.
Filers?
Close. What runs Flash on a filer?
ONTAP.
There Waffle. You go. Well, sure. ONTAP.
ONTAP. Okay.
We're not done with Fabric Orchestrator yet. And I apologize that I can't talk more about this now, but we're already working on the next version of this as well, which is, a year and beyond. But we're going to start bringing ONTAP into this fold as well. And the idea here is what we're doing with ONTAP, and that's breaking it down. And if I can tease you with anything, I'll say something along the lines of not every customer needs to be running SAN services. Not every customer is going to need everything in ONTAP running all the time. So if we were to take some of the fundamentals of ONTAP and bring those in, I don't know, to run alongside in a sidecar, in a pod, in NKS. Mm.
I mean, I'm not saying
hint, wink, wink. I'm just, like, hypothetically, it'd be really cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, hypothetically, it would be cool.
Yeah.
Imagine if your little container had its own baby dedicated storage controller in a sidecar within the pod. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I've heard some rumblings, and I can't remember exactly whom was talking about this, but they were kind of pushing this idea of a controller per pod. And each controller would just be like a microcontroller that's dedicated to that pod and lives for the time of that pod, and then just disappears when that pod no longer exists. Is that sort of what you're getting at a little bit?
Boy, we're getting tight on time here, guys. We should probably start wrapping up.
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. No, you're pretty close. It's much, much more than that when you look at the grander landscape of everything. But it's NetApp needs to continue to evolve itself as well. And ONTAP is the thing that it has both made it. Like I will speak for myself here. I'll take my NetApp hat off for 1 second and say that I fell in love with NetApp and ONTAP before I ever joined the company. In the late 2000s, I was doing virtualization at a giant healthcare company, and we chose NetApp Storage to do this on, mainly because of the advent of NFS into vSphere. So that was one of the, and 10 gigabit that we were getting out of the Nexus switches. If you guys remember that stuff in the late, the Nexus 5Ks, we were getting those in the late 2000s, and all of that all happened at one lightning in a bottle magic moment, right? We got vSphere 4 with NFS, we got 10 gigabit Ethernet, and we were getting new lines of storage controllers, and all of this work around shared storage was the key buzzword at the time, 12 years ago. So that was where I started making my mark. And then I legitimately, genuinely fell in love with ONTAP. When I say I bleed blue, it's not because I work for the company. I am one of those hardcore fanboys that actually loves ONTAP. But here we are 10 to 12 years later, and I will be the first one to step up and say, that is a big fat OS. It there's a lot of stuff going on in ONTAP that not every single tiny little 150 meg container needs. And I'll leave it at that.
No, that makes complete sense. It reminds me of when Windows decided to start doing containers, making Windows containers.
Nano.
And their first, I was getting there, but like the first Windows containers, Windows Server Core, they were like 12 gig, 15 gig in size, and everyone was like, no, you're missing the point. You can't,
right.
And so they came out with Nano, which Nano, they weren't really sure what they were going to do with, but they were going to do something, and Nano turned out to be what, like 112 meg if you don't add any libraries or something.
Yep.
I don't know if it's taken off at all, but at least they kind of got the message, right?
Yep.
You do have to shrink it down if it's going to be containerized. And I think it's to the benefit of the efficiency of the system as well. So I'm definitely picking up what you're putting down with the shrinking.
The future is 100% containerized. The future is massive scale in a second. You need it. You need it all right now. That's what we are on the mission as an industry. The industry has already run off. They've forgotten about compute. Kubernetes is just an API. They've completely forgotten about the enterprise. Like they're off doing crazy AI stuff now. Like the enterprise, like maybe most customers have one guy that's got Minikube running on his laptop. Like they're exploring microservices, right?
Right.
Unless you're the 1% of the 1% that can afford to have an army of SREs right now. So that's the thing that we're faced with as vendors and the channel partner community. That's what we're dealing with. Like they're a couple years behind. And I equate this to what went on back in the vSphere era as well. I remember seeing my first vMotion in 2006 and it blew my mind. But if you go back through the timeline of the industry, the enterprise didn't really pick it up and make it mainstream until about 2010, 2011. We had a good 5-year gap in there. And I think we're hitting it again. This feels like deja vu. We've probably got about a 3 to 5 year window here for the enterprise to catch up because a lot of them want to understand what a Kubernetes is. And it's an interesting dilemma to be in when you have all of these cool products and you want to show them all this stuff, but they're not ready to hear it. So it's one of those things that I think that we as vendors specifically focused on the enterprise, which we cater to not only the enterprise, but I mean, that's our customer base, right? Ask any of them. That's, Dell EMC, VMware, NetApp, HP, it's the enterprise, right? That's the core customer base for any of these companies. And at the end of the day, we've got to go and make sure that we pull them forward with us. Otherwise, why are we building all this stuff? right?
Right.
So there's two parts to this as well. That doesn't include like educating the field, educating the channel, bringing everybody up to speed on all this stuff. It's a process. It takes time. And part of doing things like you guys' awesome podcast here is trying to get that word out that, hey, we've got tools. We've got some really cool stuff. We can help. And we're not just trying to sell you a storage array. Yes, we know a thing or two about Kubernetes. We bought a company. They know a lot. They know a lot about Kubernetes. And I've even had some imposter syndrome hanging out with those guys because I don't know what the hell they're talking about half the time. But the irony of that is that they don't know a lot about the infrastructure stuff that we talk about a lot of the times. And it's this interesting marrying of the two viewpoints that has been one of the most profound things for me since I've come back to NetApp in the last couple of years.
Sometimes you just have to nod and smile. Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go look that up later, but you keep doing you.
Right.
As we start to come up on time, one of the things that we ask our guests to do is come up with a few key takeaways from the episode, things that listeners can go do or things that they should keep in mind as we're wrapping up the episode. So what would you say are the key takeaways for listeners today?
Absolutely. So the biggest thing is we're not just a storage company anymore. We're a data management company that includes on-prem gear and it includes products and tools for you to take advantage of in the cloud, right? And if you want to take a look at any of those, the hub of all of that is cloud.netapp.com. And you can find demo videos, in-depth demo videos, all the information about the product, pricing, terms, all that kind of stuff. A lot of it available on a monthly pay-go model as well, I should say. And you can do demos for almost every one of those products at a 30-day free trial. If you're a NetApp customer today, we have changed our pricing around for our Cloud Insights product, which you might know is On-Command Cloud Insights or OCI, which was an installable. We've now transitioned that to a SaaS offering that you can get for free just for being a NetApp customer. All right. We're not going to keep the data around as long, but that's, you know, we price it a lot like a lot of the SaaS services you see now. You've got the standard, basic, premium, all that kind of stuff, right? But all of these tools, you can try them for free. If you want to try Cloud Volumes and do some performance testing in AWS or Google, if you want to try Azure NetApp Files and do some performance testing and just take it for a test drive, see how it works, absolutely. So all of that stuff is available at cloud.netapp.com. I encourage everybody to spend a couple hours over there looking through all of the content, especially if you're in that discovery phase right now as an enterprise, looking for how am I going to take all of my stuff that I have in my data center and put it in the cloud because my boss is a crazy person and came in and said, we're going to have 60% of our stuff in the cloud by 2022, right? That's happened, right? And I make a joke about it in my Tech Field Day presentation, but it does happen, right? That's the, yep. That kind of stuff goes on every single day. And you're looking in there like, I don't know what to do. Come to cloud.netapp.com or get in touch with us or one of your, whatever your reseller is, your partner in business. We can certainly get you there. Last but certainly not least, I'm doing some crazy stuff again for me personally and for NetApp. So back in 2011, a lot of people will know that I started the NetApp Communities podcast. And I had no idea what I was doing. But eventually, that's still going on today, thanks to Justin and several other folks throughout the years. It's amazing to me that it's still going today, 9+ years later. But it's now known as the Tech On Tap podcast. So NetApp customers, you will enjoy that one. A lot of information there. But I'm doing some crazy stuff again where I'm kind of all in on live streaming right now. And I've been experimenting with Twitch and with YouTube. And part of me wants to do video or live all the time now. Like I don't even want to blog anymore. Like I just want to write scripts to make videos. And I know it's because everybody wants to see this massive beard that you can't see because we're just doing audio here. It's easy to find pictures of it, but I love doing videos. I love doing presentations and things like that. So I've started a Twitch channel. We've got youtube.com/netapp, which we did a pilot of a live stream anchor desk from our Insight Plus Insight event in London last week. We're going to be doing that again in Berlin in March. And then we're going to do it big at our show in Vegas. This is all like prep work. We're testing it out. But yeah, we're going to be able to live stream all of our stuff from the shows. I do a weekly show over on Twitch, twitch.tv/datacenterdude. And I'm looking at transitioning that to YouTube as well. We'll see how it goes. I'm kind of tired of explaining to people what Twitch is. But we'll figure that out. It's not just 14-year-olds playing Fortnite, I promise. It's a good portion of it, but not just that.
I've been live streaming some this year as well, Nick. I've stuck with YouTube because I can't face creating yet another channel. But yeah, I get why you're on Twitch. And you're right. It's not just that. It's a whole lot of things from a whole lot of different people. Of all ages and topics, and there's everything from cooking shows to 14-year-olds gaming. Yeah, exactly.
You can go watch a live stream, 24-hour stream of a chicken coop, and just watch chickens walk around if you want. The point is that I'm trying to be a little bit, my job, the global field CTO role, is to be out there, visible, present, and to educate and tell everybody about what all of these products are, tell this story. And yeah, let's put some of them into practice. So the last little nugget I'll leave you with here is, how would I do that? Well, on the stream, we came up with this idea of we needed to show that what the refactoring and migration process would look like from a thick enterprise monolithic application to something that's more microservice-based, scalable, running in the cloud. Somebody had the brilliant idea of, well, hey, Minecraft's got a Java server. So we have a Minecraft Java server running in a single EC2 instance, and we're building a ton of stuff in it, like a bunch of logos. We call it Cloud World. And as I put up the huge NetApp logo, the Microsoft and Azure logo, we're working on AWS right now. But I'm doing all of that because I want to invest time in it so that I care if we lose all of it. And in the process, we're taking, trying to do a persistent volume on NetApp cloud volumes in either AWS or I think we might try and do it in Azure as well. But we're going to try and run the containerized version of Minecraft that's scalable and can share that one shared volume. And we're going to do it without losing data. And hopefully without any downtime, just to show that all of this is possible.
It's like a different take on the old Second Life thing where everyone would have a kiosk out there back in the
day. Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
Well, Nick Howell from NetApp, this has been a very enjoyable and a lot of fun recording this show with you about what NetApp is doing in the cloud. And for people that want to follow you personally, you gave us a ton of NetApp resources to follow. How do people follow you specifically?
The easiest way is at Data Center Dude on Twitter, and you can find pretty much links to there everywhere. I've got a website, datacenterdude.com. It's dated at this point. I need to overhaul that thing, and that's coming this year as well. But yeah, you can find links to Twitch and YouTube and all that stuff on my Twitter bio. With the website's coming along, there's somebody working on it literally right now, the next iteration of it. And we're evolving it to be more live streaming and video friendly than written blog posts, but also available on LinkedIn. You can find me pretty much anywhere.
Sure.
Except I'm not approved networks. Another company started using the Data Center Dude moniker. Don't be confused. I'm not a cartoon character.
Are you sure?
Thanks again, Nick, for appearing on Day 2 Cloud. And thanks to NetApp for sponsoring the show today. That's how we feed our family. So we really appreciate our sponsors here. Virtual high fives to all of you out in the audience for tuning in today. If you have suggestions for future shows, yeah, we want to hear them. We want to know what you want to hear. Hit either of us up on Twitter. I'm at EC Banks. Ned is at Ned1313. Ned's got a form on his website if you'd like to let us know via that, nedinthecloud.com. And again, tell us what you'd like us to be recording for you on the Day 2 Cloud podcast. Packet Pushers is the network you're hearing Day 2 Cloud on, and we have a weekly newsletter, Human Infrastructure Magazine. HIM is loaded with the best stuff we find on the internet, plus our own feature articles and commentary. It's free, and it doesn't suck. Get the next issue via packetpushers.net/newsletter. And until then, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.